I wanted to start with this 1948 page from South Africa's most well-read pictorial magazine, The Outspan. As Elsa and Helmuth Houseman were actually neither South Africans nor people you're likely to have known. Before I introduce the couple and how I'm gonna try to think through the critically unexamined work they produced here in Cape Town as German Jewish refugees, I wanted to briefly relate how it was that I first came to them and why their archive has proven to be so compelling. As some of you know, my dissertation focuses on Anne Fischer, a German Jewish photographer who fled Berlin for Cape Town, where she established a new life and career for herself, first as a leftist documentary photographer and later as a more commercial portraitist. Her story is an incredible one, filled with love affairs and clandestine documentary work and leftist intrigue, the sorts of stories that many of us are drawn to telling as writers, I think, not only because they're incredibly compelling, but because they seem to reflect the better parts of ourselves, the parts that would like to believe that we too would have fought against fascism or joined the struggle against apartheid if we had found ourselves in a similar position. As I began to uncover more about Fischer, however, I also began to learn more about a number of her similarly exiled Weimar women colleagues, such as Etzel Mittag-Fodor and Elsa Houseman, who had also sought refuge from Nazism in this cosmopolitan city. What struck me about these women was not so much their similarities, but their differences. Although all of them had come from similar socioeconomic backgrounds in Germany, were trained in photography, and had been racially persecuted and forced into exile as Jews, their stories and the work that they produced were incredibly different. Their biographies kept bringing me back to a question that I hadn't yet been able to address, namely, how their approaches to belonging in their new colonial context affected their work, and how in turn their work would indelibly come to affect their new context. Although the current art historical narrative might suggest otherwise, not every German Jewish refugee who sought asylum from Nazism in South Africa was a freedom fighter, and not every immigre who with a camera joined the struggle. Some, like the Houseman's, would become parvenus, eager to accept the privileges of whiteness that they would come to realize could be theirs in a country that was similarly experiencing the rise of white nationalism. Their story, as we will see, forces us to grapple with an uncomfortable paradox, one which I argue a more nuanced understanding of denizenship can provide a compelling and productive framework for. Before discussing the specificities of Elsa and Helmuth's work and their experiences of exile in South Africa, however, I wanted to quickly outline how I'm using this notion of denizenship and to explain what it is I mean when I refer to the work that they produced in Cape Town as denizen photography. As I'm sure that some of you know, the term denizen was once used in British law to refer to foreign nationals who were denied certain legal rights that were more specifically reserved for native-born residents. In effect, it was a term that was used to designate the rather precarious position of a second-class citizen, of a foreigner who'd been allowed into a country and was made subject to its laws, but who is not necessarily protected by them. Today, of course, we more commonly use the word to describe a person who frequents a place, to refer, for example, to someone who visits a particular cafe or area of the city so often that they start to be seen in some ways as belonging to it. Looking to Helmuth's unpublished memoir, as well as a number of his and Elsa's extant photographs, in what follows, I want to more closely examine how the couple navigated, photographed, and wrote their new city as anxious German Jewish refugees, determined parvenus, and young denizen photographers. To do so, I turn to Marcia Miskimmon's seminal scholarship on world-making denizenship, which I'm sure that most, if not all of you, are hopefully familiar with, a figuration that has helped us to explore how artists and their work can contribute to more inclusionary forms of belonging. My interest in the Houseman's, however, lies in the counterexample that both they and their work offer this more positive formulation. While the photographs that they produced in South Africa did indeed help to build a world, it was one that was rather problematically predicated on shifting and exclusionary notions of whiteness. So I'm gonna give you a little bit of biographical detail about them before kind of launching into this larger discussion. So in 1935, after Elsa Houseman's Hamburg photography studio was vandalized by members of Hitler's youth, she and her husband Helmuth decided to flee Nazi Germany. After spending months as itinerant exiles in Europe, the couple seized the only opportunity they could find for escape and boarded a ship that was bound for South Africa. When they arrived in Cape Town, Elsa secured a job retouching and developing prints in a local photography studio, and Helmuth set out into the city streets with their Leica. Navigating their new city on foot, he began exploring its various residential and urban areas from a ground level and attempted to secure work as an itinerant street photographer. In the process of frequenting Cape Town's affluent parks and gardens, Helmuth began to find success in informal children's portraiture and decided to expand his repertoire to include outdoor luncheons, wedding parties, and other social functions. As the months progressed, he became a recurring presence not only on the city streets, but among its white affluent social circles, a denizen who could always be found at important private and public events with his camera. Between 1936 and 1939, while the Housemans are working to establish themselves in Cape Town and beginning to build up their own photographic studio, fascism, of course, continued to spread throughout Europe. As South Africa was drawn near to the brink of war, each passing day brought with it reminders to the Housemans of their legal precarity and of how easily they could be expelled from the place that they were desperately trying to make their home. With the passing of the Aliens Act in early 1937, for example, the South African government legally deemed Jews unassimilable and threatened to revoke the residency permits that had earlier granted asylum seekers. Less than 2 years later, when South Africa entered the war, the Second World War, alongside Britain, Helmuth writes that he looked up from his work only to find that he and his wife had suddenly been declared, quote, enemy aliens. Afraid that they would be interned because they were German-born and terrified that the South African government might repatriate them to a country that had only recently revoked their citizenship, the young couple grew increasingly anxious. Quote, for many months, we had nothing but worries over our heads, Helmuth writes, and the tempo of our integration into this country of our adoption became so much faster. Given the unstable position that the Housemans occupied during these years as stateless refugees, the places that Helmuth chose to visit in Cape Town and the people he opted to photograph carry a particular significance. Unlike his similarly exiled colleagues who had decided to establish themselves among the city's working classes, for example, Helmuth had set his sights on becoming the go-to photographer for what he refers to as, quote, South Africa's high society. Among the innumerable images he made of Cape Town's elite during this period is a now weathered picture of a man and woman who appear to be enjoying themselves over drinks at Delmonico's restaurant on Riebeek Street. Taken during the war, Helmuth's snapshot of this well-dressed couple exemplifies the type of work he produced in South Africa as a young denizen photographer. For years, he visited Delmonico's and other posh venues in Cape Town, where, quote, night after night, he created what must have amounted to thousands of images of the city's white leisured bourgeois. A true parvenu, his decision to spend time among the city's white moneyed class was not only financially motivated, but aspirational. The more he frequented Cape Town's elite venues and the more time that he spent among their socializing with its wealthy white clientele, the stronger his position among their cohort became. With each of his visits to these places, Helmuth either established a new relationship or strengthened an old one, his presence building up like a patina throughout the city and among the upper echelons of its white society. As his connections with Cape Town's white bourgeois grew, however, so too did his determination to differentiate between South Africa's increasingly racist policies and those that he and his wife had only recently fallen victim to under National Socialism. Somewhat paradoxically, it would seem that the Housemans' own experiences of racial persecution had not made them sympathetic to those in their new context, whom they knew were similarly being discriminated against on the basis of race. As is evinced throughout his memoir, Helmuth readily welcomed the privileges his designation as European afforded him in South Africa, and would come to express full-throated support for a racially segregated system which, he was beginning to see, could potentially benefit him. Indeed, rather than allowing himself to acknowledge the parallels that existed between his new context and the one he had only recently escaped, the young exilic photographer instead chose to adamantly maintain that, quote, everybody was treated as an equal in South Africa, despite being repeatedly presented with evidence to the contrary. In the decade leading up to apartheid, for example, many of the places that Helmuth chose to frequent upheld a social, although not yet legal, color bar, which he was learning was exclusionary of those who had been deemed non-white and yet did not discriminate against Jews. South African hospitality, Helmuth was learning, was only truly extended to a select few. While establishments like Delmonico's readily welcomed German Jewish immigrants who had been racialized in Europe, it apparently drew a line when it came to admitting darker skinned patrons who the state had designated as non-European. Throughout the late 1930s and 1940s, the restaurant boasted bands and performances by people of color, but refused to serve them. With cigarettes poised leisurely between their fingers, the man and woman in Helmuth's image appear unconcerned with the structures of inequality that were enabling their evening and remarkably comfortable in a space that had been both created and reserved for them, one to which Helmuth had initially been permitted access to by means of his profession and which his photographic images would, over the years, help to reaffirm. It is here, finally, where my interest in why Helmuth chose to image this particular world shifts to considering how, in doing so, he and Elsa also contributed to producing it. While many of the pictures that the couple made during these years, such as this one, were purchased by their subjects, kept as mementos in private photo albums or passed along to friends and family, others were published and circulated en masse throughout South Africa's newspapers, magazines, and illustrated weeklies. Among the publications that their photographs appeared in most often was the Outspan, a richly illustrated South African weekly, which boasted full-page pictorial installments and frequent photographic competitions. Every week, for example, the Outspan's editors would print spreads with pictures of white South Africans the reader was told he or she may know. And almost every week, these pages showcased one or more portraits by photo housemen. And I just chose two to kind of randomly show you. There are hundreds of them because they did a page like this every week in the journal. But I saw that Brenda Danilowitz was in the audience last week, and I think she's in there and among me today, although I can't see her face. In the bottom left-hand corner is a photo by photo houseman of Pierre Neef's niece. And he was, for those of you who don't know, he was a modernist South African painter who kind of became the darling of the National Party in a sense. And immediately above it is a portrait by Constance Stewart Larrabee, who I know Brenda has written on. So this will kind of give you an idea of the sorts of company that they would have kept kind of in these publications that they were making. So that's, I just wanted to include those for you guys. So in the years leading up to South Africa's 1948 elections, the young exilic couple not only depicted white members of South Africa's community, but problematically contributed to a growing collective imagining of this community as white. While it is doubtful that Elsa and Helmuth could have foreseen the larger ideological role their work would help would play in helping to redefine what it meant to be South African under National Party rule, by 1948, they were more than well-versed in the nation's visual economy and fully aware of the power that photographs could have in shaping notions of citizenship. Indeed, their understanding of the importance of images in this matter can be seen in their decision to submit a portrait of themselves and their daughter, Ava, to the Outspan's newly launched South African Family Competition, and what might be seen as a last bid for their own belonging in the months immediately leading up to the country's pivotal 1948 elections. Elections that resulted in the coming to power of D.F. Malan and South Africa's white nationalists. Published less than 2 months before the National Party came to power, the couple's appearance in the widely read weekly not only socially qualified their South Africanness, but visually signaled their right to be included in the country's new consensus. Just as Helmuth's repeated presence in Cape Town's physical spaces had enabled him to build networks and to establish a sense of belonging in his and Elsa's new city, their frequent presence in the nation's mass-circulated press, both in name and, in this instance, image, helped to reaffirm their position in its increasingly exclusionary and notably white imagined body politic. By 1960, when Helmuth was beginning to draft his memoir, he and Elsa could boast having taken photographs of internationally acclaimed film stars, famous musicians, and almost all of South Africa's leading politicians, including the head of the National Party, D.F. Malan, and later Hendrik Verwoerd, the well-known architect of apartheid, who Helmuth would write, quote, always had a smile for the photographer. As the years progressed, Helmuth's support for the National Party and its racist government continued to grow. In the early 1960s, he would argue that Verwoerd was merely fighting for the survival of a white population that was itself under threat, and dismissed the prime minister's earlier support of Hitler's Nazi regime as being nothing more than a youthful mishap. As a member of the Jewish faith, Helmuth wrote, shortly after the Sharpeville massacre in 1960, I know what it means for many years of past experience to be called a second-class citizen, but I challenge the majority of Europeans if they can compare the situation here in South Africa with any time during the Hitler regime. Roughly 3 years later, Helmuth would argue that South Africa was, quote, the last bulwark of Western civilization, and declared that it would be a tragic day for all of us, whatever race, color, or denomination we belong to, should the government be forced to surrender to the pressure artificially created from a world of people who do not and who do not want to know better. Let me tell the world at large, he asserted, that right here in sunny South Africa, we are still living in harmony. Nobody, whatever race he or she belongs to, is in danger of their lives, and every one of us, be they black or be they of white skin, is able to find work and earn a decent living, and of course is protected by the laws of the land, and so shall it be forever. In a period in which millions of autochthonous South Africans were denied their rights based not on the place of their birth, but on the color of their skin, examining the conditions of Elsa and Helmuth's legal and social denizenship raises important questions about how they sought civic security in a context that was beginning to model itself after the one they had only recently escaped. While the connections that they forged and the work that they produced over the course of their career in Cape Town did ultimately enable them to secure a privileged place in their new city and in their new society, it also secured their position on a side of history that has, for many reasons, been allowed to go unexamined. In the midst of recuperating more inspirational histories of resistance that can help motivate us in reshaping the world that we find ourselves in now, The Housemen's commitment to their assimilation stands as a reminder of not only how exceptional their more left-leaning colleagues' interventions were, but of how easily our own desires for belonging and stability can contribute to the exclusion and oppression of others. Ultimately, their archive reveals the need to more fully explore the ways in which exiles have used photography to mediate their relationship to their new homes, not only with critical eyes, as is more often discussed in the literature, but with assimilationist ones.